Joint session of the 62nd Legislature, budget session, will please come to order. Senator Hines, Representative Brown, and Representative Throne will escort the First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, their children Mary and Pete, and His Excellency the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade, to this joint session. This body will stand at ease to the sound of the gavel. The joint session will now come to order.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, it is my pleasure to announce the following guest, the Honorable Gregory A. Phillips, 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, Circuit Judge, escorted by Senator Nicholas, Representatives Gingrey and Byrd. The Honorable Alan Johnson, United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Emmerich and Representatives Teeters and Goggles. The Honorable Scott W. Skovdahl, United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Landon and Representatives Lockhart and Stubson. The Honorable Kelly Rankin, United States Magistrate Judge of the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Anderson and Representatives Blake and Harvey. Honorable William U. Hill, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Rothfuss and Representatives Green and Walters. The Honorable E. James Burke, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Hastert and Representatives Nicholas and Escobel. The Honorable Michael Davis, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Peterson and Representatives Patton and Coleman. The Honorable Kate Fox, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Christensen and Representatives Blickery and Blevins. The Honorable Cindy Hill, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, escorted by Senator Meyer, Representatives Piperinen and Yagi. Honorable Mark Gordon, State Treasurer, escorted by Senator Driscoll and Representatives Barlow and Madden. The Honorable Cynthia I. Cloud, State Auditor, escorted by Senator Kraft and Representatives Crone and Northrup. The Honorable Max Maxfield, Secretary of State, escorted by Senator Case, Representatives Berger and Larson. The Honorable Marilyn S. Kite, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Perkins and Representatives Petroff and Summers. The First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, their children Mary and Pete, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade, escorted by Senator Hines and Representatives Brown and Throne. Thank you.
I would like to invite Reverend Rick Veit to please give the invocation.
Let us pray. O God, the author of peace and lover of concord, we humbly come before you this day and ask you to guide and govern us by your great and Holy Spirit as we begin another year together. We commend to your gracious care in keeping all the women and men of this legislative session, the support staff, our senators and representatives, our governor, and all others assembled. Send down upon them the spirit of wisdom, charity, and justice, that with steadfast purpose they may faithfully serve in their positions to promote the well-being of all people. This year we especially remember Representative Sue Wallace. We thank you for her life and for her service to this state. We pray for her family and any others who may be grieving at this time. Finally, bless our Governor Matt Mead as he speaks today. Bless also Chief Justice Marilyn Kite. May their words inspire us and inspire the people of this great state of Wyoming. We ask all of these things in the name of our one and holy God. Amen.
Amen. Members of the 62nd Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I present His Excellency, the Governor of the great state of Wyoming, Matthew H. Mead.
Good morning, thank you. Good morning, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
It's not going to get any better than that. I think, thanks for a great morning. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the 62nd Legislature, Secretary Maxfield, Auditor Cloud, Treasurer Gordon, Superintendent Hill, Chief Justice Kite, Judge Phillips, all members of the judiciary, fellow citizens, and my family, I appreciate the legislature letting me bring in my family now for this fourth state of the state. And if you've watched over the years, you may say, is that the same family? Pete grew 7 inches last year, so. I'm reminded as I looked at the packed house, and I thank everyone for being here, that certainly one of the perks of being governor is you pretty much guaranteed a seat at the State of the State address. So I'm pleased to be here. This is my fourth State of the State address, and the occasion is as special as it was 3 years ago. It is truly an honor to be able to be here and to address all of you. For the last 3 years, each address has been available live online. That's a first for our state, and it shows the types of opportunities technology can provide. In this instance, technology provides unprecedented access to my annual address to the legislature on the opening day of the session. Welcome to all of you attending in person and via the Internet. I want to begin this morning by remembering Sue Wallace. Sue served in legislature as a representative from Campbell County since 2007. She died on January 28th. Sue was a poet. Her eloquence was evident in her writing and in debating on the floor, in my office, and around the state. And for those of you that had the privilege of knowing Sue, you know that her smile gave joy to all those she met. She was a wonderful person, and we miss her. So I ask you to join me in a moment of silence in Sue's memory. I appreciate today that we have many members in the audience, and some I'm going to introduce, but let me start out with, we have members of the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes with us. Good communications, good relations, the ability to work through problems has always been a hallmark of the legislature, the governor's office, and the business council. We appreciate them making a long travel over what I understand were not the best roads to be with us. Please join me in recognizing members of the tribes, and if they would stand. Thank you. I'd like now to take the opportunity to pay tribute to all people in uniform, remembering first and foremost the 79 Wyoming service members from the various branches and from our Army and Air Guard who have died in serving the country since 9/11. The bravery and sacrifice of these individuals is beyond anything else, above all else. We can never repay them, but we will never forget them. In 2013, our Guard had 2,797 members. These men and women of the Guard raise their hand. They volunteer to defend what we hold dear. They deploy overseas with all the risks attendant in such deployment. They serve here and at home for defense purposes and in disaster assistance. They have been tremendous. For example, with the serious floods of 2011, with the severe wildfires for two summers in Wyoming and the West, they have stepped up. Carol and I have had the privilege of visiting our troops certainly many places in the state, outside of the state, and we visited our troops in Cuba and in Kosovo. And this last Thanksgiving, we had the rare privilege of serving over 160 members of our Guard Thanksgiving dinner in Bahrain. And I can tell you, when we visit these troops overseas, the message is the same from the base commanders. Our Guard serve at the highest level. They always take it up a notch. So I can tell you firsthand, Wyoming can be proud every day of the men and women in the Wyoming Guard. Please join me in showing our appreciation to General Reiner and the men and women of the Wyoming National Guard. General, please stand. We must also take a moment to recognize what our law enforcement means to the state of Wyoming. Law enforcement officers respond to emergencies and help keep our communities and our roads safe. A study done last year reported Wyoming had the fifth lowest crime rate in the country. Last year, Wyoming also had the fewest highway fatalities we've had since World War II. There were 87 fatalities on Wyoming roadways in 2013. This makes last year the first year since 1945 where roadway deaths were less than 100. During my first year in office, I created the Council on Impaired Driving through my seventh executive order. The Council has been pursuing an aggressive ad campaign and legislative changes to make a difference in people's attitudes about drinking and driving. We lost 33 individuals to alcohol-related fatalities in 2013. To be sure, 33 is too many, but 33 is the lowest number of alcohol-related fatalities in over 30 years. Wyoming sheriffs and chiefs, the Highway Patrol, our local and county officers, we appreciate all you do. Thanks also to members of the Governor's Council on Impaired Driving for your hard work. Thanks to the legislature for strong laws, and thanks to the traveling public for heeding the message about responsible driving. Please join me in acknowledging Wyoming law enforcement, the council, and our responsible citizens for making such a difference. Finally, I want to thank our state's emergency responders, firefighters, and medical personnel, many of whom are volunteers. When help is needed, when medical care is needed, whether it's life-saving measures or everyday care for us or our loved ones, we are so glad these folks are on the job. Amy Sorensen, a registered nurse at Wyoming Medical Center in Casper, is an example. On December 30th, Amy was on a commercial flight from Des Moines to Denver, and a call went out over the intercom, "Does anybody know medical treatment?" Amy responded. She acknowledged that she has that ability. She and another nurse attended the captain of the plane, who was exhibiting signs of a heart attack. The plane diverted. The pilot was treated at Omaha Hospital. And the pilot, a couple of weeks ago, contacted Amy and is doing well. Now, Amy went straight back to work, and she has lots to do because Amy is also a member of the Wyoming National Guard. So join me in recognizing Amy and those who serve our medical and emergency need. Amy, please stand. So let's take a look back at the last few years. We can see our state has navigated some hurdles. Recovering from the recession, which marked the end of last decade, and rebounding from fiscal uncertainties that led to budget reductions of more than 6% last year. Clearing these hurdles allows us to enjoy economic growth, higher revenue than was forecasted, and resilient communities. As a state, we have made remarkable progress. Achievements include a state energy strategy released last May that we are implementing and has already grown and improved. Added support for local government, which I believe should be a long-term, full-time commitment. Improved infrastructure from roads to schools, water projects, other facilities. Major broadband expansion, 700% growth in access for students just last year. A pro-economic climate nurtured by outreach efforts, targeted incentives, and support for communities, public-private partnership, and local economic development groups. And more efficient government through merging agencies, consolidating technology services, reorganizing the Department of Health, and reducing the state workforce and state rules. Regarding the workforce, considering all types of employees, in 2013, we have almost 300 fewer employees than we did when I took office. We are doing more with less. Regarding rules, in March last year, I asked agencies to review their rules with an eye to simplifying and reducing them. I asked each agency for a reduction in one-third in number and one-third in length. I recognize not all will be able to reach that benchmark, but it is worthwhile. The rules initiative has been underway for less than a year, and already we see great progress. For example, the nursing board revised its rules for the nursing profession to achieve a reduction of nearly 50% in length and 30% in number. In December, the Department of Transportation repealed 10 chapters of rules, and the Wyoming Retirement System Board repealed 7 chapters. These efforts are significant and show what can be achieved. Simpler, fewer, and more accessible rules are an ongoing exercise in government efficiency. From day one in this office, I have continued to push on how Wyoming should be pro-business, support local government, build infrastructure, have more efficient government, and advance technology. Our efforts, your efforts in this regard, have been paying off. A couple of things you should be aware of. Wyoming's ratings. Wyoming is rated number 9 by CNBC in its 2013 Best States for Business. It's rated number 5 in Polina's corporate 2013 rankings of the top 10 pro-business states. It's rated number 4 by the American Legislative Exchange Council for best economic outlook in 2013. Wyoming has been rated the first or second best run state by 24/7 Wall Street in the last 4 annual rankings. You're to be congratulated. It's a wonderful mark. We are rated number 5 for fiscal condition for fiscal year 2012 in a January 2014 report from Mercatus Center at George Mason University. And ladies and gentlemen, we have been rated number 1 by the Tax Foundation in 2013 and again in 2014 as the most business-friendly tax climate. My first year in office, we have gained and we have held the highest credit rating, AAA from Standard & Poor's. Now, we don't look at these economic numbers just in isolation. We look at how they affect our citizens, and here's how it does. Wyoming has the third lowest poverty rate in the nation. We have the lowest poverty rate in the nation as it relates to children. And we have the third highest percentage of residents with high school diplomas per capita. Wyoming ranks number 6 for personal income growth in the third quarter of 2013. Our state unemployment remains low at 4.4% in December 2013, down from 6.5% at the end of 2010, and it is the 7th lowest in the country. From December 2012 to December 2013, non-farm employment in Wyoming rose from 286,400 to 290,000 jobs, a 1.3% increase. We have energy development, we have ag production, lots of both, and we proudly have the cleanest air in the country. During my time in office, our permanent savings have grown from about $5.3 billion, projected to over $6.2 billion this year, and our rainy day funds have grown by more than $600 million to about $1.6 billion. And these savings have served us well. On top of this, recently we have been rated as the state with the best license plate in the country. What else do you need? We appreciate that study, but it was a study of the obvious. Our bucking horse and its rider against the mountain backdrop represent freedom, independence, natural beauty, and we're proud to have these images as emblematic of our state. The great numbers our state has been posting show the benefits of living and working in Wyoming. There are many. 9 days after I took office, in my first State of the State address, I talked about the importance of economic growth and diversification. Talk quickly turned into action, and we have, in fact, been growing and diversifying our economy. For example, we have growth in manufacturing, growth in data centers, growth in other technology-related businesses. Just this last year, we've seen companies related to gun and gun manufacturing parts come to Wyoming. And for a third straight year, industrial employment grew in our state. According to data collected by Manufacturing News, Wyoming added 584 manufacturing jobs between October 2012 and October 2013. That's a 1.7% increase in 1 year, and is a full percentage higher than the national average. Wyoming now has 1,182 manufacturers who employ over 34,000 employees. L&H Industrial and Searing Industries are two examples of the growing manufacturing sector. A second-generation Wyoming company, L&H, has facilities in Gillette and Sheridan. It provides products and services for the mining industry and has operation in 16 countries. It was one of 23 success stories presented at the Business Forum last November. Searing Industries provides steel tubing, pipe, and other products out of its new Cheyenne facility. This, too, is a family business growing and expanding from California into Wyoming. Data centers, Microsoft, Ptolemy, Greenhouse Data, to name a few, have begun to dot the Wyoming landscape. Understandably, Wyoming has so many advantages, a cool climate, low electricity costs, available space and infrastructure. They're hard to resist. And I talked about recruiting data centers in my first State of the State address, and look what has been achieved since putting our efforts into recruiting. Wyoming has been ranked as the number 2 state among emerging data center hubs in 2012 by Business Facilities magazine. We have made the effort, and the effort is paying off. So we continue to need to build upon the success we've had and recognize that the success that we have had is because those who came before us, legislators, governors, and importantly, business people. And in Wyoming, we've had some real trailblazers in business. Last fall, the UW Business School and Wyoming Business Alliance, Wyoming Heritage Foundation, in a cooperative effort, created the Wyoming Business Hall of Fame. The first people honored were W. Edwards Deming, J.C. Penney, Homer Scott Sr., H.A. Dave True, and Clarine Law. All five are business trailblazers from Wyoming, and four of them were honored in memoriam. Clarine Law, the fifth person honored, is here today. She has been a state legislator, a longtime businesswoman in Jackson. And anyone who's been in Jackson on business or pleasure the last 54 years has likely stayed in one of Clarine's motels and heard her signature greeting, "How may I help you?" Clarine, you represent so many good things about Wyoming, the hospitality industry and community service being among them. You were the first president of the Wyoming Lodging and Restaurant Association. You served as a member of the Wyoming Business Council. And you started with 12 rooms at the Antler to now four Jackson motels with 400 rooms. You show the importance of tourism and the importance of growing business. You are a role model we can look to as we continue to work for growth and diversity in our state's economy. Clarine Law, please stand so we can recognize you. Now, we speak about our state rankings, successes, and dynamic businesses, not to boast, but because such things benefit our citizens. We speak about them because they mean more jobs. We speak about them because fiscal stability and economic growth give Wyoming the resources available to address the needs of our citizens. A failing economy helps no one. A buoyant economy helps everyone. It's clear that the programs for those who have need of help and the financial condition our state enjoys are intertwined. They are connected. As a state, only if we are prospering are we able to do what we can and have done and can continue to do, what the private sector does, partner with the private sector, and help those who are not doing so well right now do better. In this way, we lay the ground for the future. More people leading a quality of life and fewer problems that have mushroomed because they were not dealt with earlier. Whatever the interest is, homelessness, school safety, developmental disability, the elderly, deteriorating state facilities, for example, the state cannot address them in a failing economy. And that's the real significance of a strong economy. It allows us the latitude to do what we otherwise could not. We're pleased when the state employment rate remains low. We are pleased when we learn about another company expanding, relocating, or just getting started in Wyoming. We are pleased when Wyoming records the seventh largest growth in the nation of international exports, 17% in 2012. Ladies and gentlemen, the bottom line is this. Wyoming is a strong state. The state of the state is strong, and it is getting stronger. Be proud of your work. Be proud of Wyoming and its citizens, and let's keep moving forward. To move forward, to build on our strengths, we must continue to save, and we must continue to invest wisely. Here's my view. Where is the balance? Well, if Wyoming was a stock to be sold on the market, I cannot think of a better investment. I'm placing my faith in Wyoming, its businesses, its natural resources, and most of all, its people. My budget provides the opportunity to invest, to bank on Wyoming. This investment should include increased support for local government, funding to complete a unified network, increased funding for school and courtroom security for the elderly and those with developmental disabilities and for upgrading state institutions and facilities, pay raises for teachers, UW, community colleges, and other state employees. Under my budget proposal, we can make this investment in Wyoming and at the same time continue to save money and keep the budget relatively flat. My budget is a conservative budget. It provides for $3.33 billion in total general fund spending compared to $3.31 billion in my previous budget. If you look at a graph of the budget of the last decade, you see a growth line that went up dramatically. The budget doubled in that period. My budget puts an end to the upward trend, flattening the line, and I have not budgeted every dollar. I have left over $200 million on the table for your consideration. Don't spend it all in one place. We're in a great position to invest in our people, infrastructure, and communities. With that in mind, I recommend $175 million for local government. This amount should be distributed by a formula that is tried and true versus something new. It is both money and the predictability of the money that most helps our local governments. I recommend the funds needed, about $15.7 million, for a unified network. The unified network is the interstate highway of the 21st century, which gives our rural state the same technological advances as urban states. It's vital infrastructure that will help keep Wyoming competitive. I recommend that the budget provide for employee performance. Some of the people in uniform we recognized earlier who help protect us, the guard, the highway patrol, are state folks with special skills and abilities that grow with years of experience and training. The same can be said of teachers and other state employees. Our employees serve the public well not only because it's the right thing to do, but because they've learned the ropes. Retention, however, is becoming an issue. And it makes little sense to me for the state to lose expertise the state helped develop. We are doing more with fewer employees. We're seeing income growth in the private sector. It's been 4 years since state employees have had a raise, and it is time for one now. As I've said, some other matters should not be left unaddressed. I believe this to be the case with respect to older state facilities, programs for the elderly, school safety, and courtroom security concerns. We should not put off till tomorrow what we can do today. Therefore, I'm recommending funding for courthouse security, juvenile justice, school safety, DD waitlists, health programs, medical homes, aging and disability resource centers, 211, and immunization, and the Life Resource Center, the State Hospital, the Veterans Home, and the Boys School. The health recommendations are geared to improving access to care, prevention, and more effective care, as well as allowing the elderly to stay in their homes longer. The recommendation for those with developmental disability is to reduce the wait list to 18 months. With respect to the State Hospital, Wyoming Life Resource Center, Veterans Home, and the Boys School, you should recognize these facilities do not have naturally built-in big constituencies or lobbying power to pound on the door to ask for resources. But our state has taken the responsibility of having them. Where our state has stepped in, we have to step up and provide good care and good facilities. That's the Wyoming way, and my budget provides for them. Outside of specific budget issues, I note the Employment First Summit took place last week. This summit, sponsored by the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities, looks at opportunities for people with disabilities. The Employment First program is both positive and empowering. Last July, I established the first homeless service coordinator. The purpose to better coordinate services and develop a long-term plan to address homelessness in our state. We will continue to work on these and other initiatives. We in Wyoming, I'm proud to say, have developed what I believe is a strong state energy strategy. And rightfully so, if you're number one in exports of BTUs, you should have an energy strategy. So too do we need to develop a water strategy. We have begun this work. We have finished listening sessions. We heard about people around the state, what they have to say about water development, water management, water conservation and protection, and restoration. We have top-notch water development agency. We have some of the best planners and engineers available working for the state. We have the information, we have the science, and the expertise at our disposal. We have the best water law, which must remain intact. So now is the time to put projects on the ground. I've talked about these water projects in my campaign in office, and I recognize they are expensive. They take time, and the permitting is difficult. They're not easy to pull off. But if we wait till tomorrow, it's not going to get any easier. We must all begin the work to push for water projects, big, large, small, all water projects, for ag, industry, wildlife, and other purposes. It will be a great, great legacy of this legislature to be able to say we did all we can to protect Wyoming water. Wyoming water has served us and will serve us well, but we know individuals in other states are looking at Wyoming water. Ladies and gentlemen, no one has a better claim than Wyoming people to Wyoming water, so it's up to us to act now for our water future. Energy, tourism, and agriculture remain our top three economic anchors, and we continue to look for ways to promote these industries. In my budget, I recommend $100,000 for deep water ports and $50,000 for LNG exports. I've also proposed $15 million for a test center for carbon capture and sequestration research beyond enhanced oil recovery. We need to develop commercially viable uses for CO2. We want to assure that we have, in the future, a complex mix of energy sources, and coal should be a big part of that future. This is the time to push ahead with advanced technologies. Remember, we are number one. We are the national leader in exporting BTUs. To maintain that title, we also must be a leader in innovation. And UW, thanks to legislative support, is moving ahead with innovation. And I would like to welcome here today new president of the University of Wyoming, Dick McGinnity. Dick, if you'll stand up. Dick, we are pleased to have you on board, and be interested to read your book on a very unique selection process. In my previous budget, I asked for $15 million of funds to be matched by the private sector for energy research at UW. Last month, I traveled to Houston, as I have in the past, to seek securing matching funds. Today, I can happily report that letters of commitment for all $15 million of matching funds has been received. Remember, this isn't just money. It is a recognition by the private sector that we are on the right track with technology and innovation at UW. And as I've mentioned in a prior state of the state, we have to remember ag. Ag is not just an economic driver. It helps shape our identity while supporting our wildlife and quality of life. Its value cannot be overstated. For ag to prosper, ag producers must have something to sell. Therefore, I'm recommending a major increase in funding over the last biennium for predator control. With respect to tourism, our number two industry, we have great momentum. We've made great progress. Let's keep the momentum going. I have recommended added funding for tourism, including funds for expanding market efforts to new markets. Programs at the University of Wyoming and our wonderful, wonderful community colleges are vital for our state's future. They'll provide opportunities for education for students who want to go into these three fields, energy, tourism, ag, and many, many more fields. We need to educate the next generation so these three industries and all our industries can remain strong. And as I've said in the past, more opportunities for career and technical education are integral to that effort. International trade opportunities are also a priority. Our state is not an island. It's not just us. We compete in a global market, and Wyoming companies are developing and making products for here that go around the world. We need to make sure we do what we can to help those companies get their products out there everywhere. Now, last year, I visited Canada, South Korea, and Taiwan to promote trade. The tourism office was an important part of the trip to Asia, and Wyoming companies participated in the Canada trip. Outreach efforts have begun, and they certainly should not end. We must continue to work for increased export opportunities for Wyoming businesses and products. The Joint Appropriations Committee added $350,000 for developing international trade. I support this. As a state, we are fortunate. We have much to be thankful for, but there is more to do. I continue to believe the Affordable Care Act is being badly implemented. It has created uncertainties. Some deadlines have been delayed. Some exemptions have been granted. And the exchange rollout has been flawed. What's happened thus far with the Affordable Care Act has not engendered confidence. Far from it. So when the federal government tells the state that the program's there and the checks are in the mail and we'll pay for it, I have trouble with those pronouncements. I want to see proof of performance. Now, we'll see if the situation with the ACA improves. But in my mind, it has not occurred yet, and therefore I tried to provide as much notice to those that disagree with me or those that agree with me that at this time I did not support this expansion. Now I recognize this is a position, but it is far from an answer to addressing the needs of over 17,000 of our citizens who may not have access to health care. I have mentioned some of my budget proposals for health programs, including medical homes and more money for aging and disability resource centers. Programs like these will be beneficial to our state. They will help, but it is not the complete answer. And we as a legislature, you as a legislature, me in the executive branch, have a duty to continue to find answers. Now, in addition to HHS, we have to keep track of other federal agencies and their goings-on. I'll give you a few examples. The EPA, and for those of you not familiar, that's the Environmental Protection Agency. We seem to have, or at least I seem to be, having many battles with this federal agency. This regulatory agency recently decided to change our state boundaries with no notice to the state. Consistent with this heavy-handed approach, the EPA has also decided that some coal-fired facilities in Wyoming will be under the thumb of a federal regional haze plan. We have a good state plan for regulating regional haze, so I've asked the Attorney General and DEQ to review what EPA has done and provide me the best option to make sure we preserve state primacy. We are closely monitoring EPA's rulemaking for new and existing power plants. And when federal agencies propose unreasonable rules, exceed their authority, or pick energy winners and losers, we should and we will challenge them. As a state with a lot of public land, we work with federal land managers like the BLM, Forest Service, and others on land management plans. When issues arise, for example, failure to control the wild horse population, attempts to curtail grazing, or other poor decisions with regard to the Endangered Species Act, we will address them and address them directly. I venture to say that here in Wyoming, we know more and care more about the beauty of our state, its pristine environment, land stewardship, and wildlife than a federal agencies with officials more than 2,000 miles away. But in saying this, we must make sure we're doing what we should for our game, our fish, our wildlife, our habitat. Our wildlife in Wyoming means much to our state, means much to us as individuals, and it includes revenue from hunting and fishing, recreation opportunities for viewing and enjoying the amazing beauty of Wyoming. Wyoming sportsmen, to be clear, are a great economic driver, and they recognize the value of a strong game and fish department. And we must recognize the value of game and fish not only to sportsmen, but to each of us. So I would leave you with this. If Wyoming wildlife is worth the watching, it is worth the supporting. Our citizens are Wyoming's greatest resource. And I begin with my remarks today recognizing some of our exceptional citizens, and I want to end the same way. I meet so many wonderful people in the state of Wyoming in small towns and big towns, and I get to see parents and teachers, students and community and business leaders, representatives of local organizations and places where they live and work each day. And I never fail to be inspired by what I see in our citizens across the state of Wyoming. So I'd like to take a few minutes to recognize some of those folks. I want to recognize Steve and Kristen Marler, parents from Natrona County, incredible parents, who received the National Adoption Excellence Award from HHS last year. Steve and Kristen have three biological children. They've been fostering parenting since 2008. They have six adopted children from the foster care system. And as you meet all their children, boy, are they well-behaved, well-dressed, and just wonderful, wonderful family. These parents have also hosted approximately 60 foster children in their home over the years. They are amazing company, so please join me in recognizing Steve and Kristen Marler. Mick Wiest is a high school English teacher at Fort McKenzie High School in Sheridan. And Mick was named as Wyoming's 2014 Teacher of the Year. He's been a teacher for more than 25 years, and his passion for teaching has never waned. It is said, he says, he loves to teach, and he believes that all children can learn and learn by doing. Also with us today is Michael Espy from Bags, the Little Snake River Valley School. This is amazing. He won the National Science Award from DuPont and was selected as one of only 60 students nationwide invited to the White House Science Fair last year. He is the first national FFA member to receive the award. His project was to determine which organic ingredient produced the most methane gas. Mick, Michael, thank you for being here. Please stand so we can recognize both of you. Recognizing Mick and Michael today reminds us that we have to be attentive to education. We spend a great deal of money on education in Wyoming, rightly so, and we want to see results. Our kids, teachers, communities, and state deserve the best in education. From early childhood education through college completion, we must keep our focus on improvement, and we will. I would ask that you indulge me as I recognize another person here today with us, and that's my wife, Carol, for her work on literacy, the Eat, Read, Grow program, and the publication of Wyoming First, a book for children illustrated by Wyoming high school students. I also recognize the team of 11 Wyoming runners, including Carol, who completed the New York City Marathon last fall. The team raised $31,000 for the Wyoming Remember the 8 Endowment. The endowment supports programs to prevent alcohol use by high school students and to encourage responsible alcohol use by college students of legal drinking age. Thank you to the team. Thank you to Carol. She said don't put this in here, but I overruled her. Thanks, Carol. We all have issues we have to wade through. We couldn't do it without the help of a lot of people. George Parks, longtime executive director of the Wyoming Association of Municipalities, retired in January. And Marion Loomis, longtime executive director of the Wyoming Mining Association, will retire in April. These two have been advocates for years. They have done their job with honesty and integrity. And the way they have done it has assisted all of us to make better decisions. We're in a better place because of their work. So thank you to you both. Please stand so we can recognize both of you. What I have talked about today is a snapshot of a comprehensive budget which represents the work of many hands and minds. I've talked about aspects of that budget and about Wyoming people, success, and prospects. Before I finish, I want to thank my staff as well as agency directors and their staffs for the hours and months it has taken, beginning last spring until now when the budget is passed off to you, the legislature. In Wyoming, we have inherited a great legacy to safeguard and improve upon. We can do both. In Wyoming, we still believe, with all our heart, the American dream, and we believe we want the best opportunities for all our citizens. We can pursue that goal as well. We have challenges. We have challenges to be sure, but Wyoming will address them head on. We know that sometimes people want to stand on the sidelines. They want to be cynical. They don't want to move forward. But let me say this. With a bronc on our license plate, we know how to saddle up and tackle problems. That's the Wyoming way. That's the way we do it. And in the last 3 years, we had issues came up from wolves, pavilion, flooding, landslides, wildfires. We stepped up. We saddled up. Our job is to meet challenges and turn them into opportunities. We have tough decisions ahead on health care, on education, on budget matters. But none of us are here to find an easy road. We are here to find the right road. The road that says Wyoming will move forward for the benefit of our citizens today and for the benefit of future generations. This is not a game of kick the can. Decisions have to be made. Tough decisions have to be made. And we are reminded that the place where we face the most political risk is often the place where we make the decisions that need to be made. We are in an enviable position, and the time now is right to invest in our state, our people, and our future. My budget makes that investment. And always, I want to thank the legislature in advance. It's a remarkable thing here in Wyoming. You leave your jobs, your homes, your family to come do the service that you do. I thank you for that. I look forward to working with you. And I will conclude by saying, may God continue to guide us in our work, and may God continue to bless wonderful Wyoming and beautiful America. Thank you very much.
Governor Meade, on behalf of the members of the Wyoming Legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. Members of the 62nd Legislature, distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Honorable Marilyn S. Kite, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Governor and Mrs. Meade, members of the 62nd Wyoming Legislature, elected officials, members of the judiciary who are here today, and citizens of the state of Wyoming. It is an honor to speak to you on behalf of the men and women who serve in the judicial branch of our state's government. Thank you, President Ross and Speaker Lubnow, for the invitation to do so. Although the Constitution creates different responsibilities for the three branches of our state government that is represented here today, it imposes the duty on all of us to serve the public. And I speak for the members of the Wyoming judiciary when I wish you energy and wisdom you will need as you perform your legislative responsibilities in the upcoming session. First, I decided I could not stand before you today and ignore the elephant in the room. Last session, this body passed SF 104 with a two-thirds vote. The constitutionality of that law was challenged, and 2 weeks ago, with a split vote of 3-2, the Supreme Court ruled that statute unconstitutional. We understand that decision has caused great concern for many in this chamber, and just as certain, it will present new challenges for the legislature, for the governor, and likely for the court as well. Clearly, there is nothing to be done but to embrace those challenges and to go back to work fulfilling our respective constitutional obligations to the people of this state. As the philosopher once said, the moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. Not all the piety nor wit will lure it back to cancel half a line. This session brings you a myriad of other issues, some of which involve the Wyoming judiciary, and I want to focus on those during the limited time I have with you today. First, we have continued to see rapid turnover in the ranks of our judges, as we predicted several years ago when you considered the pay raise for the judicial branch. A generational shift is occurring, and there are more of us baby boomers who are considering retirement. In the last 3.5 years, we have added 16 new judges, and in just the next 2 years, 16 more of our judges will turn 65 or older. We can all be proud of our judicial selection process that operates on merit and not politics. Since I spoke to you last, our Judicial Nominating Commission and the Governor have been very busy selecting 6 new judges. Judge John Prokos in Green River replaced retiring Judge Vicki Schofield. Circuit Judge Craig Jones in Rock Springs replaced Judge Dan Forgey, who moved to Natrona County to replace retiring Judge David Park. Circuit Judge Brian Christensen, also in Natrona County, replaced retiring Judge Michael Huber. And, of course, Justice Kate Fox was just sworn into her new position on the Wyoming Supreme Court, replacing retiring Justice Barton Boyd. We will miss those who retired, and we welcome our new colleagues. We could not accomplish the delivery of equal justice to all without our dedicated judicial employees. And on that score, we have experienced a costly 30% turnover rate in our circuit courts because our salaries simply have not kept pace. We strongly support the governor's position that it is time to provide raises for all state employees. Technology continues to offer opportunities and challenges to our judicial system. We have reported to you in the last few years about our progress on developing and implementing a new uniform case management system in our district courts. And we are happy to announce today that in 22 district courts, that system is operating, and the last court will come online within the next month. And remember, there are different county-operated systems. There were different county operating systems in each of those counties, as well as elected district court clerks. Designing and implementing this new uniform system and transferring all of the data, in some counties going all the way back to statehood, has required all of the dedication and creativity of our IT staff, as well as the cooperation and time of 23 clerks of district court. And we're now designing a similar system for circuit courts and an electronic filing system for both circuit and district courts. We commend this body for the foresight and the leadership in making this investment to improve the delivery of judicial resources and services to our Wyoming citizens. In the last 3 legislative sessions, I have reported about our efforts to accomplish issuance and payment of citations electronically. In the last 2 years, we have received over $9.5 million, 24 hours a day, from all over the world. The speed and accessibility of that system has lowered accounts receivable, increased the time value of money collected, and, by the way, it was accomplished by our IT staff without any increase in funding to our budget. Enabling the issuance of electronic citations, it was a slower and more difficult process as it required a complete overhaul of the Highway Patrol's data management system. And I am happy to report that today, patrolmen from all over the state can now enter citations electronically, and the Department of Transportation, as well as our circuit courts, can receive them in the same way. We have many to thank for this accomplishment, and one of them is here with us today. Sergeant Jim Gates rode herd on that effort, and we owe him and his team a great debt, and let's recognize him. Sergeant Gates. While e-citations will be a great assistance to our circuit courts, they may have an even greater impact on law enforcement by freeing up officers to actually do their difficult job of protecting the public. Our budget also includes some funding to assist local law enforcement agencies so they can enjoy the same technological improvements, and we commend the Joint Appropriations Committee for supporting that request. Without a doubt, technology has improved our system of justice, but it has also created huge challenges for courts and lawyers. As has happened in every facet of our lives, the web has changed everything. An explosion of websites touts legal advice for free legal documents. $50 for a will, $75 for divorce pleadings, and $89.99 for online mediation of any dispute you may have, all with assurances that these legal services comply with your local state laws. Companies of unknown origin reap hundreds of millions of dollars in profits from these companies, many outsourcing the actual work to India and other locations far beyond the reach of our ethical rules. Your families and friends are becoming easy targets of their entrepreneurial efforts. We have witnessed the results in our courts when families found their estates were not protected and businesses relying on unenforceable contracts lost money. Self-represented people were denied relief because their documents were faulty. Our entire profession is really struggling with how to protect the public and still support access to justice for those who cannot afford legal counsel. We are committed to meeting those challenges, and having just returned from the Chief Justice Conference, I can assure you that every other state is struggling with these same issues. While technology can allow the judicial process to move more quickly and inexpensively, our rules and decades of traditional practice by lawyers and judges sometimes present hurdles to real progress. We must modernize the civil justice process so it operates faster and less expensively, or we risk becoming irrelevant. You may recall that when retired Justice Voigt last spoke to this body, he warned that the cost and delay experienced in civil cases was causing citizens to look beyond the courts to resolve their disputes, forcing people to try their cases in the back room of a Holiday Inn with rented mediators or judges and even rented juries. The general structure of our civil justice system remains unchanged for over three quarters of a century. The first rule of civil procedure, rule number one, promises a system that will secure just, speedy, and inexpensive determination of every action. While our system is certainly delivering just determinations, it has not lived up to the promise of speedy or inexpensive. We have assembled a group of judges and lawyers to help us reform the rules so that promise can be kept. But the work is slow. With your assistance, we did increase the circuit court jurisdiction to $50,000 or less, and that allowed us to move smaller cases into that faster, simpler process. And the feedback on that change is good. However, progress on the larger cases and on domestic relations matters is much harder to achieve. Our Rule 1 initiative has held focus groups with lawyers and interviews with district judges to explore how to reduce the time and cost of civil litigation. We have not found a very effective way of obtaining input from the public, the litigants who come to our courts, and they also deserve to be heard. You will not be surprised to learn that the legal system resists change. After all, judges and lawyers are taught to rely on precedent. In addition, with independent district court judges and clerks of district court and a hodgepodge of old statutes passed in some in the Model T Ford days, we are simply not structured in a way that makes uniform change easy. We need to reexamine how we function. I'm reminded of the story about the little girl learning from her mom how to bake the Christmas ham. First, mom cuts off the end of the ham and then places it in the pan. The little girl asks, "Why did you cut off the end of that ham?" And mom says, "Because that's the way your grandma always did." So the little girl goes to her grandma and says, "Grandma, why did you cut off the end of that ham?" And the grandma says, "Well, that's the way my mother did it." So she goes to her great-grandmother and says the same thing, "Why did you cut off the end of that ham?" And her grandmother replies, "It's simple. I did it because I didn't have a big enough pan." Doing things that because that's the way we've always done them is not a good reason. We have to question why we do things the way we do them and not fear changing to find a better way. We're committed to continuing our efforts, and we will keep you informed of our progress. And finally, I need to discuss the issue of greatest importance to the judicial branch this session, court security. I reported to you last year about an incident in the Riverton Circuit Court where a gun was fired into the metal building that houses that court, entering behind the judge's bench, crossing over the defense table, and lodging on the opposite wall. That incident was a wake-up call about the vulnerability of our judges, employees, witnesses, jurors, and citizens who use our courts every day. Even though our courts operate with state employees who perform constitutionally guaranteed state functions, court facilities have historically been provided by county governments. And we have been essentially non-paying tenants in their buildings. In addition, our citizens, jurors, witnesses, and litigants come into court buildings not by choice, but because they are compelled to do so. At the same time, we all know court proceedings frequently involve violent, angry, and mentally unstable people. And we all know that it is not a question of if, but when a Wyoming court will join that long list of courts throughout the country as a target of a violent attack. We will not allow that to happen without making every effort to prevent such a tragedy. We were very pleased with the leadership of the Joint Appropriations Committee when it approved Senate File 14, which creates a $10 million court security fund for matching grants to partner with counties that do not have even minimally secure court facilities. The experts on the Court Security Commission will help develop the priorities, and the SLIB will make a final approval of any grant. And for you who represent counties with unsafe court facilities, and I'd be willing to bet that's way over half of you here in this body, this bill should be one of your highest priorities. We are a state who can well afford to protect the safety of our citizens, and this legislation is long overdue. So we urge your support of Senate File 14. In closing, I want to add a personal note. First of all, I want to thank my husband, Skip, who unknowingly had to make a cross-state trip yesterday in some interesting Wyoming conditions in order to get me here today. And so now he knows what I've been doing for the last 4 years. Thank you, Skip. This is the last time I will have an opportunity and the privilege, really, to speak to you as Chief Justice. I am proud of the accomplishments of the judicial branch over the last 4 years, and I know that Justice Burke, who will succeed me, is dedicated to continuing that progress and will bring energy and commitment to the job. Leading the legislative efforts of the judicial branch is one of the most important responsibilities of Chief Justice, and I have been inspired and enriched by the opportunity to work collaboratively with you for the betterment of our judicial system. At the beginning of January, well over a month ago, as I thought back on my goals for this position and looked forward to the future, I came across a poem that captured my sentiments perfectly. It was written by one of your own, Representative Sue Wallace, and I was so looking forward to watching her smiling face as I read it to you today. A force greater than ours has determined she would not be here to share this moment with us, and we mourn her passing and will miss her greatly. I urge us all to live up to the inspired words of her poem entitled Long-Term Objectives. To live life with purpose, with passion, sucking it all up with great slurps like sacred water, orgasmic twitters fingering the high notes, strumming the bass with finesse and grace. To have descendants ubiquitous and stubborn as sagebrush, adaptable and elusive as coyotes, challenging everywhere their colleagues, their constituents, their countries, to ever-expanding scopes of integrity and humanity, and to write words that sweat truth 100 years from now. We wish you well in your work during this session as you strive to find the solutions to the challenges to our state. Good luck and Godspeed.
Justice Kite, on behalf of the members of the Wyoming Legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and your message to us. Senator Hines, Representatives Brown and Throne, would you please escort the governor from the chamber? Senator Perkins and Representatives Petroff and Summers, will you please escort the Chief Justice from the chamber? Rusty, you can go. Sorry. Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the members of the Senate, thank you for hosting us and for the House of Representatives hosting the entire body. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that this joint session be dissolved.
Is there a second?
Mr. President, I second that motion.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the Senate be recessed until 2 p.m.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Senate is in recess until 2 p.m.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House be in recess until 2 p.m.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
House will stay in session until House is in recess until 2 p.m.